And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You are very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. For this Friday, it's the 12th of July and it's 5 minutes past nine, and so much to back in to the next 3 hours. I'll introduce very shortly to you our Friday panel discussing some of the big stories of the day and the week. And also later on, Taoiseach Simon Harris will be joining us. Nikki Bradley's going to be on the programme as well. And as I mentioned just before the news there, we'll also be hooking in with our colleagues at Galway Bay FM, because one of the big games of this weekend, of course, is Donegal versus Galway, and excitement is at fever pitch. So let's see who we have with us today. And we can say good morning first to Independent Deputy Mark McSherry. Good morning, Mark. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us on the programme today. Also, we have Councillor Dakota Nick-Menemum, Sinn Féin Councillor in the Municipal District of Lifford-Stranorlar. Good morning to you, Dakota.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you on the show. And Eimear McGuinness, Manager of Donegal Mart. How are you getting on, Eimear?
I'm good. Well.
You didn't get your broadband updated since we last spoke, anyway.
Well, I actually did, and I had a new computer this morning. It wouldn't work. I couldn't link in, so I have to go back to the old one.
Well, I would strongly suggest you take that new computer and bring it back. listen, thank you so much for your time. It's always good to have you with us on the show. Lots to get through, but just many of us couldn't resist staying up till past 1 o'clock last night to watch the big boy press conference, as remarkably the Democrats chose to frame it. And that was Joe Biden in the United States. And given his recent public gaffes and the increasing pressure from with his own party, Mark, I'll ask you, do you think Joe Biden will or should contest the US elections? I suppose given the ramifications, the global ramifications that you know, they go far beyond the United States.
I'm always amazed that you know, the most advanced economy in the world reduced themselves to such a poor binary choice every 4 or 5 years. I think Mr. Biden comes across as a nice man, but I'm not being remotely ageist. I just think the sorts of pressures of that job and the demands of it are beginning to show very much, you know, with some of the gaffes and mixing up names and so on. And you know, from his own personal perspective, he may be better to step aside. There seems to be, looking at some of the international media this morning, there seems to be increasing speculation now that he will be prevailed upon to step aside. But, you know, who knows?
Yeah, indeed. Dakota, what's your view on it? I mean, you know, and I understand where Mark's coming from by prefacing his remarks by saying it's not ageist, but age comes to us all, and it does seem to be that his age is having an impact on operating in the highest or one of the highest offices in the world.
Yeah, I think it is quite shocking that the two candidates that they have, I don't think either of them are competent to carry out that job, in my own opinion. And the only two candidates that they are coming down to is two older men that have had their run already, like, and they've shown like what their policies, and I think they need change. And
the problem is though, change at this stage is complicated. Eimear, what's your view?
Sure, it's obviously based on a lot of money. You know, it is crazy. Like, it's a young person's game. There's a lot of traveling to be done, and there's a lot of formalities to be done. And they're just the simple things. You know, we're not even taking into account decision making. Yeah, look, as I say, probably money is behind most of them decisions made. And that's very wrong for such a big population of people and so many big decisions to be made.
Yeah, Mark, Keir Starmer's come out in support of him. Simon Harris also, you know, saying, well, we're not going to interfere in what's happening in the US, but we, you know, we've had a long conversation with him. He's a good person to work with. Are world leaders, and there were others saying similar coming out of the NATO meeting, are world leaders just hedging their bets and just in case he does continue to run and does succeed, and sort of letting the Americans sort it out internally?
Well, I mean, you've got to do that. I mean, all we can do is express personal opinions, but ultimately it's a matter for the people of the United States. So all those world leaders, you know, will support the leader of the day of another country in the main. I mean, obviously, you know, Putin and various countries involved in various things aside, probably Netanyahu, Putin, we'd all have views on. But the reality is, whoever gets elected, it's the prerogative of whoever's the Irish government is to deal with them, to respect the view of the American people. But, you know, our view is really just sort of scenery. But you know, we all have our view. I mean, I think, God, you know, so many talented people throughout the United States. And, you know, we have, you know, Trump, who, while there are Republican policies I would agree with, I mean, I think he is a totally different moral compass than most of the planet. And I think Biden has given a very, very good inning since 1970 or thereabouts in national politics in America, and is entitled to a retirement. They're just my personal views. But as Emer was saying, and it's the polar opposite of our situation in terms of money, you can't fundraise at all here anymore, and quite rightly so. But over there, it's the guy with the most money, or the girl with the most money, is going to be the candidate, whether it's for the district attorney, whether it's the mayor, whether it's the governor, whether it's Senate, Congress, or president.
Yeah, but Emer, I think that points to really us, the people, how easy we're influenced by these campaign adverts, how easy we're influenced in terms of, you know, messaging being pushed our way. We're just real sponges, aren't we, Emer? If it really does simply come down to how much money you have to push an agenda.
Right. It always comes down to that. Like, we see it here in election times too. Sitting councillors will always find it a lot simpler to get elected. And I suppose Dakota, she probably would know more about that, you know, than me at the minute. But, like, you know, they can offer so much to the public when it's coming to election time. There's so many things they can do. That the newbie coming in, maybe independent under a party, doesn't have. So money is God when it comes to a lot of things, and politics is no different.
I'll stay with you, Emer. One of the big stories for us anyway here in the Northwest was the leaked legal advice from the then Attorney General Paul Gallagher. It was published by The Ditch. Just paraphrasing it, there's so much in there, but he said effectively that victims would abuse the scheme. He said that if it were too generous, it would lead to more applications. Can you imagine? And also that holiday homes shouldn't be included because they were failed investments. And also, too, you know, listening, I thought an attorney general gave legal advice, but it seemed to be really more assessment of the scruples of the Donegal public at that time, and I suppose the wider public now. It is advice. We don't know how that advice formed the scheme that's there at the moment, but still, it pulls the curtain back a little bit as to the conversations that be happening and the views there are of sort of the public.
Look, it's kind of like, I suppose, through my job, we'd be applying for state grants or whatever grants are available for marks and that. And they all boil down to the same thing. It's about how much they can give, but at the same time, how much they can save. So, you know, we have an organisation there for marks throughout the country. And before they'd give these out, we'd always try and go and have a discussion beforehand of how we think they should be rolled out. But your views are really not. They'll have a meeting with you, but they're not taken on board. Were his comments taken on board? Most definitely. But the difference in that and what I'm talking about, and Mark's on that, is these are people and families that did not ask to be in this situation. They don't want to go in and take advantage of a scheme. They just are left in dire straits of having no homes to live in, and not being able to afford to do their daily, just go about their daily lives. And it's shocking. This should have been, and it wasn't even at their hands that they were left in this situation. It is the government's fault. So wholeheartedly, and like we've been saying this from, we spoke about this many times when I've been on here, they just really need to just get behind it now and roll out and do whatever they have to do, regardless of what it costs. Because we spend so much money foolishly throughout the country on rubbish, if you ask me. But I don't know. It's definitely something that should be done. And you'd like to think now, after all this scandal, that they might actually cut themselves on, I suppose.
It's the lack of consideration for the emotional impact. And of course, then by default, the physical impact this has on people. And also the advice about limiting costs now. And Taoiseach Simon Harris will reject this strongly later. It feels like it's not about following science. and using public money in a responsible way. It's about how little can be spent now without factoring in the fact that these houses might continue to deteriorate in walls that aren't included or internal walls or what have you. You know what I mean? I mean, there is a responsibility to do the right thing with the public money as well, not just to stand with the people affected by this crisis.
Oh, look, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what he says later today. But at the end of the day, it is an awful situation, the people on the left. And like, I even see there's houses here in Kittlybegs. Like, these people did not ask for this. And it's up to our government now to find the money wherever they have to and sort it out. And like, if we're still talking about this in the next year or two, it's disgraceful, really. You know,
Mark McSherry, I'll bring you in too, because of course this is not just the Donegal crisis now. It's into Sligo, it's in down the west coast, and finding its way in through the Midlands. What do you think of, I suppose, really the Attorney General's advice? Because as I said to Emer, it kind of gives us a peek into how these decisions are formulated or indeed made.
Yeah, I mean, look, his advice didn't surprise me. You know, I've seen lots of sort of letters like this over the years. I mean, the state will always be seeking to minimise any state exposure. And you could look at thalidomide survivors. There are a whole series of situations where, you know, if we saw the sort of intra-departmental memos over at BAC, we'd be absolutely horrified, I would suggest. Reading the letter, I think it's an account of a meeting. And yeah, it's typical state. They're looking to minimise exposures and so on. But look, the scheme is in place, and I think we need to continue to work to refine the scheme, because with only 61 sort of beneficiaries at this stage, clearly it's very cumbersome. Clearly it is not as user-friendly as it's going to need to be, particularly in Donegal, most affected. Sligo, I gather, through statutory instrument, are going to be added next week. Mayo are there, and they're going to be other counties. The other thing, and this point has been made by Piers Doherty and others, is the fact that within this advice, it also highlights, look, we need to pursue who we can pursue. And there are a number of people here that can be pursued. There's professional indemnity insurance for lenders. There's professional indemnity insurance for architects, for engineers, presumably the quarries, the builders themselves. Now, that'll be cumbersome and difficult for the state to pursue all of these individuals, but they should.
It seems though, Mark, sorry to cut across you, it seems though that okay. The policy is to choose the path of least resistance, the people. That's the easiest thing.
That is always the state's default position, sadly, except when they make mistakes themselves, such as, for example, the National Children's Hospital, which by their own admission, they are not in a position to tell you how much it'll be. And that dates back about 5 years when I asked the question on the Public Accounts Committee myself, how much it's going to cost. We don't know. So there is an endless supply of money to minimise the exposure of wrongdoing when it happens within the state apparatus. For example, systemic failure is always blamed as opposed to the people actually at fault for wrongdoing. Thus, history will always repeat itself. So I think, the positioning of the state, as outlined in this letter, no surprise to me. It is the default position of the state. I don't like it, but that's how it is.
So is this in the same wheelhouse then as sort of, say, for instance, how the HSC would contest claims against it, you know, throw lots of taxpayers' money to frustrate the process? It goes on for years and years and years, and then eventually a deal is made on the steps of the High Court or something along those lines. Like, is this in that same space, Mark?
The default position of the state is blind defence. And I have some direct experience of this with the court case with the Standards and Public Office Commission, where I can tell you the overall costs were many multiples of any compensations paid, right? And this is the norm. The other thing, and you mentioned the HSE, that the HSE routinely do is they'll settle the case without admission of liability. Therefore, any physicians who've actually made a mistake are not subject to any additional oversight, retraining, or a period of being monitored, whatever, which in effect potentially exposes the state to further litigation.
Yeah, Dakota, there's an awful lot to unravel in this. And I mean, obviously, first and foremost, it does look like the Attorney General's fingerprints are on this scheme, though we can never really prove that. But, you know, there's an awful lot of hurt amongst those who are victims of this scandal. And this is very hurtful. These words cut really, really deep on people, Dakota.
Yeah, definitely. So, like, the amount of financial distress, mental stress, and, you know, the unsafe conditions that people have been living in, just for the Attorney General to come out and say that they would abuse the system, it just shows how out of touch the Attorney General is and the government with reality, if they think that that's what people would do with this scheme, when all these people want is just to fix their homes, and it's not their fault that their homes are crumbling. And it just clearly shows that they never intended to make the scheme easily accessible to the general public either. So there's a lot that you have to go through, and just so that report just showed there was a focus on reducing the number of applications and keeping the cost down as much as they could.
Yeah, and I had to record the interview with the Taoiseach a little earlier on, and we'll play it out a little earlier on, but we were talking about the scheme and what changes can be made. And one thing he mentioned twice, which is obviously something that must be coming down the line, is interest-free loans. Now, for that to be a key introduction for a 100% redress scheme, I think it's quite, not a revelation, but it's quite an interesting in that they see that it's almost accepting that the scheme will not match the repair costs of a house. So one of the solutions to that is interest-free loans, Mark. I'm not saying it's peculiar, but I mean, I think that kind of, it sounds a little bit like me about putting the hands up and saying, right, it's not 100% redress.
Yeah, I haven't heard the interview, but from what he's saying, and I'm not going to try and second guess what he's saying if you're going to play it out later on, I guess what he may be referring to is if there's a shortfall above 420,000, that additional monies would be made available on an interest-free basis. But I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably correct in relation
to
that.
You'll have to tell
that.
Us yourself on that.
Of course. Well, we'll have to. Sometimes you have to listen back to things a couple of times to make full sense of it. All right, listen, we'll come back. There's loads more to talk about, of course. We're in the company of Deputy Mark McSharry, Councillor Dakota Nick-Menamin, and also Eamon McGuinness, Manager of the Donegal Mart. On the front of the papers today, that consideration should be given to graduated fines to ensure drivers travelling at higher speeds are more severely punished, Garda Commissioner Drew Harris has told the government. In a letter to then Minister of State for Transport Jack Chambers in May, Mr. Harris said that the introduction of graduated penalty point system in proportion to the relevant offence should deter poor drivers and the bad behaviours on Irish roads. And it's in the context of another horrendous year on Irish roads. Deputy McSharry, like, what do you think we could or should be doing to try and improve the safety? Because it seems the road safety message is not getting through to drivers, because unfortunately we're and I'm not attributing any blame at all to any recent road traffic collisions, because investigations are ongoing, but it is it's sad to see the trend going up the way.
Yeah, I suppose one of the things is compared to say 30 years ago or 40 years ago, I think the highest number of deaths we ever had was in 1976, 600 or 700, I think, in that year. There's infinitely more people driving now. Cars are more accessible to younger people maybe with a little bit less experience. That's not to say it's their fault necessarily. Perhaps, you know, the graduated penalties is an idea. I mean, look, whatever works is worth trying. And I think that, people who are guilty of misdemeanors certainly should have their knuckles wrapped in an appropriate way. People who are repeat offenders or people who are doing sort of very substantially over the speed limits pose a greater threat. So perhaps a more severe penalty to them is appropriate.
I think, Eamon McGuinness, the problem is for many people now, be it driving without insurance or tax or without a license or speeding or non-wearing of seatbelts, is there is a sense out there that the chances of getting caught are very slim. There'll always be an element or a number of people that will obey the law because the law exists, but others require actually enforcement before they take heed of laws. And, you know, you drive around Ireland, you could drive around for 3 days right around the country and you might not encounter anything other than a speed van.
Well, that's correct. The speed vans are kind of taking over the guard's role, what used to be. I suppose it's also important to remember there is, as Mark said, far more people on the roads. Like when I was 18, you know, I might have had a party. Everyone gets a car now for their 18th birthday. You know, I think times have changed so much. So there is a lot of younger people that wouldn't have that experience driving. And as you just said, yeah, there's a lot of people. Like I had an accident recently, yeah, and it was the same. There was no insurance involved. You know, it's crazy. And it's the situation that you're left in after that of people that they hit. And sometimes if it's a fatal accident as well, which is, it just is life-changing for families. I don't know what you'd actually do. I just think there's far more people on the roads now than there would have been years ago. What you'd do to change that, really don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, Dakota, what's your view on it? I mean, you know, as I say, we're hearing on a daily basis of more tragedy. It's been pointed out that there have been other years, of course, when there were less cars on the road and the figure was higher, but there seems to be a consensus that the, you know, one death obviously is one death too many. What do you have any views on what could or should be done to try and reduce the carnage on the roads? I think Dakota's frozen there. I hope she's frozen, or else it was a very crap question. We'll bring Dakota back in. We'll bring Dakota. Yes. Oh, you're there, Dakota. Yes.
To go back to Garda presence, definitely touching on what. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Yes. Go ahead. Your signal's returned there.
Back. Okay. No, what I was saying is you need to go back to Garda presence, touching on kind of what Emer was saying. We definitely need more Garda on the streets, because I think that is the biggest deterrent for any crime, not just speeding, is the Garda presence, and that is the main thing. Like, we have our road safety ads and whatnot on TV, and although they are efficient, I don't think they kind of work as a deterrent. They work to scare and like show you the reality, but they don't work as a deterrent. I think the only deterrent is Garda presence, and that we need to invest in our communities and our Gardas.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we've a young fella in the house who's gone through the process of learning to drive now, and nothing in the learning system, A, is about driving on a motorway, driving at night, driving in frost or snow, what to do on a slippy road if you have to brake. There's no practical education in relation to that. I mean, those are gaps, Dakota, are they not? That really, you know, we get people to go around the roundabout in Letterkenny twice and then send them off to do whatever they want for the rest of their lives driving.
No, it's very true. Yeah, like I'm still on my novice plates myself, and I know I wouldn't be too confident going out in the snow or ice, like, because I wasn't taught any of it. So no, there definitely is a lack of education too around other aspects of driving.
Yeah, and what are your views on the Road Safety Authority, Mark McSharry? I noticed that recently they hired a PR company, which I think is really quite perhaps not a great use of money when they could be doing other things.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a big PR wing to all aspects of state agencies now. Look, I mean, they have had very effective campaigns in the past, and I mean, we all hate those ads that come on, but they are telling, and they certainly did influence me. You know, at times, when I was younger, penalty points went up high for me, and that was a motivating factor for me.
What did you do?
I drifted over the speed limit the same as anybody else, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. And we're all guilty of it. Two things that I'd consider, I'd like to see an analysis of all the accidents and fatalities, because there's an awful lot of them at night or in the early hours of the morning. I don't think the speed vans are around then. So while I agree, if there could be more Gardaí, great, but maybe public order and other stuff has them busy at that time of night. But I think the speed vans, if they're going to be deployed, they need to be deployed all the time. The other thing, and every one of us are guilty of this, we need to get in the habit of putting our mobile phones into the boot before we get in to drive our cars. Mm. You know, I wonder how many fatal accidents where somebody, the phone buzzed, they're checking a text message or whatever, and veered.
Well, now it could be changing a song on Spotify, or it could be checking a Snap or whatever, all the stuff we shouldn't do. But I just, like, I take your points and I get where you're coming from. No one should be distracted when they're driving. The mobile phone is a great distraction now. But a lot of these brand new cars, the screens, you know, go the full way across the front of the car. There's graphics about where the power is going, what speed you're doing, what song's playing. I mean, how is that not seen as a distraction when mobile phones are, Ema? I never got my head around that.
Well, it's worse, actually. Everything's computerized, and especially some of the cars now, you're touching buttons that you never had to touch. So I don't know what's the difference in having a phone there. So yeah, you kind of wonder why we made them that way. It's screen to open everything, whether it's start the car or stop the car. Some of them are crazy. The new ones,
like some of the heating is touch screen. Do you know what I mean? That's some of the heating in the car's touch screen, which is like you're leaning over, your phone's in the boot, Mark's phone's in the boot, right? Yeah. But he wants to put the aircon on and he has to open up screens on this screen in the car. It just never seems to be factored into the conversation.
Yeah, I still do think Mark's right, you know, the phone probably, if you did see the statistics, it probably is a big problem with us, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, well, listen, stay right where you are. We've another break to take. Back with our guests after these. Keep your texts coming in to us, by the way. 086 60 25,000. Okay, I'm not going to lie. I was waiting on this one. Where is this Donegal where you get a car for your 18th birthday? Many cannot afford cars and have to depend on lifts or the magnificent public transport system. I know where you're coming from, but I also fully get where Ema is coming from, in that it's not... It's. I think it happens more often now than it might have.
Well,
in the
I
past.
Think we're getting cars. Yeah, a lot younger than we used to. That's what I mean.
Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. Drink driving by older people's not mentioned. I think it's in the round. We I think we know the demographics and the offences, but I take your point. Speeding fines should be linked to a percentage of people's salaries like other EU countries. Hit the pocket, is the only way people will understand. But again, it has to be a sense that there's going to be enforcement. Hi Greg, we really need to know, did this scheme get cabinet approval? Was the AG vice advice disclosed? Well, they had access to the AG's advice, of course. Mr McConnell needs to come on and explain the government's position and his own. Well, we know that's not going to happen. He's supposed to represent the people of Donegal, who happen to have a very serious problem, and he's supposed to have their back. He doesn't think you're biased, Greg. He's afraid to face you, as there are difficult questions for him to answer. I hope the people of Donegal remember come polling day. And Charlie McConnell has told party members that he is running again. I'm not sure that'll come as a surprise to anyone, but anyway. One of the problems is the roads. They're not up to standard in Donegal, and here we go again, bash the driving people again. I mean, there's three contributing factors to road traffic collisions, isn't there? There's the vehicle, there's the driver, and the road. The road often, I try and bring it to the fore, but it often doesn't get... the attention it should. Another distraction is these bright lights that are on cars now, especially newer cars. They blind you. They're too bright. Dakota, have you on these LED lights on these high, big 4x4s blinding you in the middle of the day or at night time for that matter?
Yeah, they are quite blinding. Yeah, definitely. I don't really know what much to say about it, but no, I find them blinding to myself anyway.
That's it. You know what? One sentence, plenty. Don't put yourself under pressure, Dakota. Ema, a lot of people don't realise, too, there's a little button in your car that's to adjust the headlights, and a lot of people just bash it straight up because they want to see it's more of the road. That's actually designed, if you put stuff in your boot, you're actually supposed to lower them because your lights get higher. You know what I mean? It's to compensate for... Did anyone know that, or is that just a learned fact today? Right. You pick up and hold the phone to the ear when driving with one hand. Also, smoking in cars and lighting up should be probably banned too. Irish people, which I think is quite nice. Irish people trust each other, the courts and the Gardaí, but not politicians, a new survey from the CSO has found. Trust in other people is at 83%, which I think, you know, that gives me a warm feeling. 70% in Gardaí, 69% in the courts, and we'll get to that in a moment. But it stands at just 26% in political parties. Mark, as an independent, a former party member, does that surprise you?
No, because increasingly in Ireland, political parties are vehicles for the personal advancement of their leader, rather than organisations that develop policy from the ground up, as all of them were, but increasingly all are top down now. People, even the memberships of parties from friendships and so on I have across the political domain, and my own experience is that the party members don't have the required sense of ownership of the national policy platform being pursued by them. And that's naturally going to rub off. So the idea of, you know, X percentage being Fianna Fáil or Sinn Féin or Labour or whatever is increasingly lowing, increasingly decreasing. As people will say, well, look, I identify with X. We don't really have swing states in Ireland other than Dunleary and Dublin South, you know. Nobody can say, oh, Donegal is Sinn Féin or Sligo is Fianna Fáil or somewhere else is Labour. It's not a surprise to me to see such a low percentage in political parties because, sadly for the worse, Irish politics has become far too presidential. It's about individuals at the top rather than the sum of the parts.
So do you think the public see the parties as self-serving?
Totally. Right. But that self-servingness is for the one at the top.
There's talk now that Micheál Martin might run for president. Is that the kind of stuff you're talking about? Maybe Leo Varadkar might end up with a nice job in Europe. Is that the type of stuff
about? The fact that a party... And listen, there's no secret that I know Micheál Martin for 35 years, right? Probably better than most people in Fianna Fáil at the moment. And I watched how he has used that organisation as a vehicle for his personal advancement. And I think he's totally lost it altogether now in terms of his narcissism, to the extent that he's prepared to admit to all. I think what I might do is I'll write the manifesto. I'll appoint who I want to appoint. I'll negotiate a program for government. And then I think I might run for the presidential election. Now, if any party leader thinks that that's going to enhance that party's prospects in a general election, then they're totally deluded. And if I was still in Fianna Fáil, I'd be calling it out the blatant narcissism that it is. If you're committed to leading the party, party delegates and members are interested in you doing that. But if you think you're going to now admit what you've done for the last 15 years and say, well, look, I just want... And the reason, by the way, in my view, that he's running for that is because the foreign and security policy spokesman's role went to the Estonian, not Micheál Martin. The park and the Arsenal Duran is plan B.
Quite the assessment. Eamonn McGuinness, I suppose, if you want to comment what Mark had to say, but also, only a quarter of people trusting political parties, apparently.
Just on that note, we'll wish Mark a happy birthday.
Okay. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Is it your birthday today, you're Mark? Welcome.
It is indeed, yeah. 51 today.
51, yeah. Again.
Yeah.
And you only look 41.
All right, sorry. Go ahead, Eamonn.
There's a certain amount, a lot of what Mark said there that I agree with. And I would see it through, you know, the whole party thing in Donegal too. You know, there's my personal feelings is there'd be one or two core people that really control and dominate what happens with the party throughout the county. And that's to its detriment a lot of the time. I would agree that a lot of times there is a few people at the top of that really don't see the bigger picture. As regards elections and candidates and everything else, and as you know, I've been through the process too, I do not think that how things are handled are to the betterment of the parties involved or the people or the candidates that put themselves forward or Dakota probably, she'll have a different opinion and she's been through that whole process recently, successfully. That's what happens and they don't actually think about the bigger picture. So I see that very... prevalent.
But the problem is at the moment is that, you know, there's such increased public awareness and understanding of the systems. And yet the systems, and maybe this is why people don't vote or people get frustrated, is that what Mark has outlined there maybe would have come as a huge shock 20 years ago. But the public kind of know the story. They know who pulls the strings. They know who runs the country. They know what income people have, what pensions they get. You know, they know the jockeying for positions. Like, say, for instance, MEPs are expected to, you know, not care about really what's going on in not really care about what's going on in Palestine, for example, because the bigger picture is to back Ursula so that Michael McGrath gets a better job. You know what I mean? Like, that's perhaps stuff might have happened behind the scenes in the past, but we all see it. It's happening now right out in front of us.
We don't really do the general public take it on board. I suppose around the time of the elections, the local elections there, I would have sat for the 2 or 3 days listening to you all, you know, going through the count and everything else. Did anyone else that I would know personally? No. They would have found it boring. They didn't care. As regards who they'd vote for, a lot of people, and these are, I'm talking about, not, I'll get shot maybe for saying this, but a lot of people I know would be, sure, who do you vote for? Maybe, sure, we're not getting that from this government, we vote for somebody different. And that's their basis on who they vote for. Which, you know, I think we should be voting for good people and putting them in, regardless a lot of the time of what party they're with, or, you know, if they're willing to work and willing to do a good job and work for the people, especially for local elections, if you're willing to work for the people in your community and look after them, that should be getting my vote, you know.
Well, Dakota, it's not all bad news. 26% of reporting they trust politics. It's slightly better for local government. 41% of respondents say they trust the local government. So there is a bit of slightly better news for local councillors.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand where people are coming from, that they wouldn't trust politicians, because, you know, we see high up politicians being exposed for different scandals, like, say, Jeffrey Donaldson in the UK, for example. Like, you know, their high up politicians do have power, and they are able to hide what is going on behind the scenes, whereas obviously local politicians don't have as much power, so explains why people would have more trust in local politicians.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you would hope that this sort of information is taken on board. Like, it would be nice to see, you know, an effort to try and rehabilitate the reputation of politics. You know what I mean? Because it is going to form part of our futures going forward. Maybe people like you coming into it have that job to do.
Yeah, that's fair. We definitely do, because there is genuine people out there who do care for their communities and do care for the well-being of Irish people, and putting people first before their own hidden agenda. So it definitely is on people like me that are new coming in to break the stigma.
A caller says, I find touch screens on cars are a definite distraction from trying to regulate heat, demist windscreens, change the radio station. Well, the simple solution to that is stick it on Highland and just leave it there. Put the speed vans where people are speeding, not on main streets like in Glenties, where a speed van is parked outside the old Limelight nightclub. It's basically tax collecting, catching people doing 5k over the limit. There's one opposite the church too in Donegal Town, which is an interesting spot. How does the RSA think that advertising will change the mindset of boy racers who tear up our roads every day? Those guys don't heed adverts. They're superior drivers in their own head. I often wonder where rally drivers practice their skills, but I now realise that it's done on the Lifford to Castlefin Road every evening from 6 p.m. onwards. This is 364 days a year. Have I seen any Gardaí? Not once. Now, I'm not. It's just quite cleverly phrased. That is what I find amusing. It's an important point. Road deaths has nothing to do with how many cars are on the road. There is no surveillance on the road in England. There are 45 million cars, yet statistically much less collisions. In New Zealand, if you get double penalty points on Saturdays and Sundays, make accidents go down in number. They talked about that for a while, and then they sort of backed off that a little bit in this country. One of the problems is the roads are not up to standard in Donegal. Another, Greg, all this talk is getting nowhere. This is more the general conversation about the state of the country. Get back on the streets like they would do in France. It's the only way to get results. I think an awful lot of people talk about that, public protests in France, Mark. It's always the thing, you know, if there's ever a problem, do what the French do. But really, the changes in France are at the ballot box. I'm not sure how really effective the street protests are, or maybe I'm misreading it. I don't know.
Well, look, it's healthy to have a culture of protesting and the right to protest. So I'm certainly not against that. I wouldn't really compare ourselves to the French situation. I think they have a very different way of doing things than we have. But we certainly have a lot to do in this country, and the challenges for Dakota and the people coming into politics now is, and you made the point earlier, Greg, about, you know, 20 years ago, you know, things were different and we now know everything that's going on and so on. The difference with politics sort of 30 years ago and 20 years ago and 40 or 50 years ago, if you go back to the Lamassas or the Cosgroves or the Dick Springs even, and right up sort of to the very early 2000s, even Bertie's first government, mm-hmm. governments took decisions, ministers took decisions. They got plenty wrong, but they took decisions. Now there's no accountability and no leadership. Every decision is subcontracted to the corporate consultancy complex and the independent report so that everybody has plausible deniability. And that's a problem. The executive increasingly are taking a non-executive role and assume a commentator position, as we've said before, you know, on health, for example. The most common retort to a parliamentary question in the Dáil is, I want to thank the deputy for raising this very important issue, but as the deputy knows, under the 2004 Health Act, that's a matter for the HSE, and I've asked their CEO to contact you directly. You know, that's not leadership, that's not democracy, and it's the big challenge for Dakota's generation.
Yeah, I always find it fascinating that really the person who is effectively like the head of the HSE can sort of go, well, you know, it's not my problem. But anyway, no, it's interesting comments as always. All right, quick break, then we're going to come back and reflect on what we have to look forward to, what we should be happy about. This should be good. Okay. Listen, we have to accept the radio, the newspapers, the TV. Everywhere we look, there's bad news. So let's talk about what reasons we have to be happy. I feel I'm going to have to start with you, Mark, on this one because it's your birthday. So the obvious one is, you know, happy birthday. It's a great reason to be happy. But what else do you do? What else distract you from the I'm good at compartmentalizing. That's what keeps me going. But what about you?
I like to go out socially. I like to, but this weekend it'll be sport. So the ideal weekend my ideal birthday weekend will be a Sligo Rovers win, a Finn Harps win, the Irish ladies versus England tonight, the Irish rugby against South Africa tomorrow, Donegal against Galway, and of course Spain against England on Sunday.
Who do you want to win between Donegal and Galway?
Donegal, obviously.
Who do you want to win between England and Spain?
Spain.
All right, okay. Spain. Have you got planning permission for all of this sport watching for the weekend? That's a lot of TV time.
Oh, no, I'll definitely check in all the games, definitely.
Yeah, I think
so
we
have to be. There are so many challenges in the world now. We got to be happy with the little things.
What I try and say to people, and I say sort of jokingly but seriously as well, I mean, we've got these 3 hours in the morning and we cover most stuff, I think, local, national, international. I don't really consume news after I finish this show. And I think what people should do is listen to the 9 till noon show and then, you know, obviously listen to the news throughout the day, but don't consume it all the time, always on the phone, then the 6-1 news, then on your phone again, then the 9 o'clock news. And it can, you know, it would wear the best of us down. Emer, this weekend or life in general, what makes you happy other than the invite to come and chat to us on your potato, because that looks like what's videoing you at the moment. I can't wait to see this new computer.
But can you see me? That's the main thing.
I'd say one, there's about 4 pixels making up your face.
Is there?
No, go on.
What makes me happy, I like same with Mark, watching the sport, going to the football. It's not the same if you don't have that at the weekend. And going out. Yeah, I think we all do need downtime. We only really appreciate, and I suppose very much for me, I only appreciate happiness and downtime and enjoying myself. You know, health is a big influence on people. And when things happen in your life or you lose someone or sickness comes into your house, really changes your perspective on what your life should be about. And the news is depressing. The world is, a lot of what's going on in the world is very depressing. And I know a lot of people that just don't listen to the news anymore because they just don't want to be depressed. So, we each ourselves have to make sure that we have that downtime and take time to go out and do what we enjoy doing each day. Or I don't.
Dakota, what turns that frown upside down?
So I suppose my family and friends definitely is the biggest one. And like you look out at the world, as Emer was saying, and like you have stuff going on in Gaza and all, and you have to remember that you are safe in a safe country at the minute, like, and you can't take that for granted. And, you know, you have pets and out in nature and stuff. It's just the simple things. It really is.
And all the stuff you've just mentioned is free, really.
Yeah, that's very true, yeah.
Okay, brilliant stuff. All right, well, Dakota, have a lovely weekend. Take care of yourself. Thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. Best wishes to you and all. Emer, great to see you. Thank you so very much.
We can't really see me.
I'm only teasing. I just can't wait to see this new computer, so we're going to have to get that sorted. Take care of yourself. Deputy Mark McSharry, thank you for your time. Have a wonderful weekend. And listen, I'm pretty much doing everything you're doing, if the truth be told. Take care of yourself. Bye-bye. All right, it is the 9 till noon show. Coming up after 10, we'll chat to Simon Harris, the Taoiseach.